Welcome to the Mac Attack Show. This is your host, Jay Mac. I'm so glad you're back. We have a very special episode as we are engaging in this election season. We wanted you all to hear from my dear friend, Lawrence Anderson, about local politics, national politics, and just knowing what to look for in a candidate. I know we're in the season where we're having debates and we're listening and everybody's excited. It's a lot of energy about voting early and so many things and voter awareness and voter suppression. So I just wanted to engage with someone who's in the know about politics and hope that you enjoy this show. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. We begin with the question of what brought him into politics. And he gives us somewhat of a backdrop about how he began in the city of Richmond. He went on, diversified his resume, went out into the world and into different localities like New Orleans and Charlotte, North Carolina. And now he's catching us up to where he is today. Check him out.
Nothing to do with that. I just was allowing things to happen and responding to things as they came and was kept, really was kept. That question always gets me into this this mode of, yeah, some people say that they know what they want to do and do it. And other people, the most people, you know, if they just allow the experiences to happen, they happen. And, you know, fortunately for me, I was lucky, blessed, all you name all of that, I was all of that. And you know, and that's what got me, that's where I'm at now. So, you know, in this role that I'm in now, it has become like incumbent upon me to leave it better than the way I found it.
As you should, as any right. position, I believe anybody should make it better for the next person.
Make it better for, and that involves us. You know, every day when they look at city council and, you know, that shot comes and I'm sitting up there with the council president, there's a responsibility in that. It's a responsibility of, you know, folks out there that maybe will look and see someone that looks like them able to do it. And that may make them, to your further point, to become civically engaged, to pay attention, to vote, to engage in the political process. And that could be something as little as saying what's up to the sanitation worker that makes sure that he picks up the trash, to joining a task force or something like that. All of that matters. All of that matters. And all of that's about being engaged in the government that we live in, you know.
Awesome, man. So you've mentioned your role going from administration. You currently work on the legislative branch of city government in the city of Richmond. And I know you've journeyed, you've helped people from the process of campaigning yep. to the day-to-day operations. Can you shed some light on the campaigning process and what voters should be looking for in a candidate? Like we hear so much information, and one of the things that frustrates me in an election process is when candidates, all they talk about is what the other person is not doing or what the other person is bad at or has done wrong, rather than lifting up their platform. Because to me, gossip and slander is negative as well. So you're not encouraging vote for you. You're just showing me that both of you are bad. So what are some things for the average person just listening to these debates, whether it be on the national platform, the gubernatorial race, even your city council? What are some things we should look for from a candidate when they're speaking?
So my answer is going to be a bit counterintuitive. Campaigns are designed to play to your human emotion. And your human emotion, as much as we would like to think that we're discerning, we respond to good, bad, hot, cold, the extremes. And so we need to understand that we respond to the extremes of it all. And as a candidate, there's only two ways you can be. I can either be new, and new is required because what you have is bad, or I can be old and good because everything that's trying to do it is new and bad. And we have to understand that we function that way. You know, you need a new car because it's either broke down or you want something better. And you go out and you look to find that. And so internally, we have to say, do I like things as they are? If my answer is yes, then what are the things that I believe will make it better? And you look for the candidate that speaks to those things. If I don't like where I am, then you know what you currently have ain't it. And so now you, again, look, what are the things that I want? And you look for the candidate that's speaking to that. I know that was a bit esoteric, but
that was good.
That's it. And so you will see it with, just take the presidential election right now. Trump won in 16 on fear. Fear for a solid block of what they decided their base was. They needed that block to come, and everyone else will make a decision on whether they're okay with that block. And at the end of the day, it's just 50 plus one. You only need one more than half to win, but in our case, the 270 electoral votes. That's a completely different process.
Oh yeah, that's a whole nother.
But just speaking in just in terms of just a head-to-head horse race, just 50 plus one. Who is my base?
Yeah.
And who are my persuadables? I don't need to talk to nobody else. I need to energize my base and focus on my persuadables. And like in Trump's case, so base racist. My persuadables are people that are sometimes racist. And they don't have to talk to nobody else. That's how you get your 50 plus one. That's from the campaign side.
Right.
So everything that you hear is going to appeal to that emotion. If you listen to Biden's ads now, it's, we need to gain our respect back.
His aim is for the anti-racist. That's his
base. Anti-racist and assimilationist. Since we're going there, the assimilationists are the persuadables. So if we create that continuum of racist, anti-racist, and the middle group being the assimilationist, his base may be anti-racist, but he's also talking to those assimilationists that can be racist sometimes. You know. Yeah. I mean, and so the continuum is the continuum.
Yeah, I definitely had no intention of bringing this up, but I feel like this is a good moment to ask this question. So I often hear the phrase, elections are not like choosing a Diet Coke or a regular Coke or sweet tea or unsweetened tea. You should not, the metaphor is suggesting that you should not vote for someone because they are less racist than anyone else. And this is one of the many reasons why there are some, especially millennials, that are saying they're not going to vote. What, for the person that's currently on the fence, whether it's the presidential election or your local election, I want to talk more about local elections in a minute, but what would you say to the person who feels like it's not worth it to vote?
So that's a hard question for me to answer in a productive way. So I have a bunch of unproductive responses to that. But I think the crux is, so what you gonna do?
Right.
So you know that things are not the way that you want it. And because you're saying you're not going to vote, it means that you've given this some thought. So give me some thought on what you're going to do in this particular system that we're in that gives you an opportunity to exercise your franchise. You have a right to speak. And so in this particular game, we can talk about whether we like the game or not, but the game is the game.
Yeah.
This is your way to play. And, you know, so for someone to say, someone that's less racist, that's an ideal. But the mere fact of the matter is that we live in a country that was founded on racism.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just a reality that, you know, people that's been kissed by the sun got to deal with.
Yeah.
We got to find a way to overcome it.
Unless you leave.
Unless you leave. But see, and that gets me to my other point. Many people that say that have never lived in another country.
Right.
I've lived in another country. I've lived in a young democracy, a Muslim country, with all that's going on in the world, of people that, a country that is coming out of authoritarian rule in Indonesia. And I would suggest, I wish I could put them in a time capsule and send them somewhere else, that when their votes, every vote ends up with people dying in the street. And you see how people respond when they haven't had the right to vote or the right to express themselves, what they would do to just do that act.
Yeah.
We've gotten to a place to where we even believe the act of democracy is somehow an inconvenience. When you have people that they know they're going to the poll and they may not make it back from the poll.
Yeah.
But have to go to the poll. And that puts it in a completely different perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. There are those, and some of our ancestors were those that
did that.
They went to vote. they were risking their life. And I often hear that used as justification, like, hey, you know, your grandfather got lynched, or almost got lynched. Your grandmother was shot down with a fire hose or beaten by police so that you could vote.
Yep.
So there's a cornucopia of reasons why a person should, but if a person is not going to do it, I love your perspective and approach. What are you going to do? But do something. I do fully believe there are ways that a person can have much more significant impact on their community and even on this nation without voting. I tell people all the time, you can get your own CDC, build up your neighborhood, and fix up your parks, improve your schools, and not talk to a politician at any point in between. Like, people can do, there's a lot people can do on their own without legislation.
Let me challenge that a bit. Until you need something, until you need a permit to build.
Yeah.
And until you're trying to get water to your, because, you know, people say, I'm gonna go to a remote place. Okay, well, you're not gonna dig deep enough into the ground and use a well, you're gonna need a water line. Where you gonna go get that water line? You're gonna have to come right on down to whatever city hall, municipal building that you had. And if it's delayed, who are you gonna call? You're gonna call that council person and you're gonna be right back at it again. And I don't care where you live, what type of government it is, human beings in a developed society, you're gonna have contact one way or another.
Yeah.
You may not view it that way, but it's contact nonetheless.
Well, I agree. I do believe at some point there would be some contact, but I also believe there is much that citizens can do.
No debate there.
That they're waiting for legislation, some form of a messiah in the form of a mayor. And it's a lot we can do on our own.
No debate there.
And I also believe if the train is rolling and the momentum is so great, even if city is not 100% in favor of what you want to do, there are ways you can make it work. I just believe that. But I do believe that there comes a point where interaction is inevitable. Mm-hmm. That, to me, I agree with you 100%. But I've witnessed people that are so strong and so influential, so powerful, whether it's raising funds, building up a community, gathering people, that by the time the city got involved, it was a train, like it was a Mack truck coming, and they could have just rolled with or gotten rolled over.
So, yep. Those are the mechanics. But you know, what's interesting that what you described, man, those are the fundamentals of politics.
Yeah.
If I can raise enough money to spend my time reaching the people that I need to reach, I got it. I tell people all the time in a campaign, there's three things that I have. I have time, I have money, and I got people. There's one thing that I can't get no more of, and that's time.
Yeah.
Right? And so I need to, you know, have enough money to get this campaign's message to the right people in this amount of time.
Gotcha. Right?
And so outside, the same rules apply. If it's something I want to do, time, money, and people. If I can garner those things strategically, I can get action. And so that fits right nicely with your point that before you even get to the elected official, you can do all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So while we're still on the subject of voting, I think some people just don't understand the importance and significance of what happens when people get elected. And so I want to ask you, what would you say are some of the important factors that go into election to consider? And I'll use the presidential election as one example. Many people don't know who appoints judges.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say number 45 has appointed more judges than any president in the history of the United States. By doing such, the judicial branch is so intertwined with the executive branch, because they think like him. And so when people have major trials or laws are put in place, then the Supreme Court is not going to combat those things, and those other district courts are not going to combat those things that we as the people may feel are wrong, because he's got the right pieces, he's got the bishop, the knight, the queen, and the pawn all in the right position to get his thing going. So that for me, that's just one reason why voting is important. We need to know, like, there are other people that could get put in position based on who's the president, as well as local elections. So I'll ask you, you can take your pick, whichever one you want to deal with first, but why are presidential elections important, and why are local elections important? And local elections consist of city council, school board, sheriff's office, and so many other things. So whichever one you want to deal with first, or if you want to deal with just one, but why are elections important?
So I think you hit on at the top level, you know, the amount of judges, the relationship between the executive and the judicial branch. I think the last thing that I heard, that 45 has appointed like 196 people to the court, not one of them look like us.
Right.
You know, so when you have someone sitting in a seat that is to be the arbiter of justice, that's not viewing the scale on a balanced way, oh, it's going to have an impact on you. Right?
Right.
Whether you want to believe it or not, whether it's happened soon, it'll happen before you know it. So that's just one. But I'll give you another one at the federal level. Just look at the nation's response to COVID. Mm. It just wasn't like we as a country did not know that we were susceptible to an airborne disease. I mean, they had an entire playbook ready for this. It was the president that decided to disband the office. It was the president, through executive power, that decided to pull back resources that we had throughout the world, that if something like this was to happen, that they can respond immediately. It was the president that did that. So there are, I mean, it's, you have an entire executive branch agency that's responsible for providing the country with guidance to protect themselves. And you have the office of the president dictating that impartial message that comes out for political gain. If you think that that's not having an impact on you, you got a bunch of people running around here without a mask and not doing the appropriate things because the president told them so. And so if you look at, I'm gonna stay at the presidency for a while. If you simply put, what is the role of a president? To keep the country safe from threats, foreign and domestic, to appoint members to the judiciary. But I would even say more importantly, to create a cohesive national message that supports all of those things. When you have someone, because either way is going to go in the favor of whoever's in party. But that last one that's unique to our particular democratic experiment is this aspirational message of a belief in the value of democracy. Now that's challenged. We got many issues to deal with in there, but what keeps everybody fighting the good fight, so to speak, is the hope that we'll get it right one day. When you disturb that, when you say things like, I don't know whether it's going to be a smooth transition of power. When you say the things like, I have a problem with all of the ballots, or that what real is not real if I didn't say it, you've now done a detriment to folks that are just looking for a basic level of cohesive leadership to move from day to day. When you don't have a person in office that at least at a fundamental level believes in that, your democracy is at risk, right? So that's where we are at a national level, right? Money or resources come from that national level to the state.
Right.
So your governor has those same authorities that the president has for the state. Those same resources are now closer to you, getting your driver's license. When you get on the highway, that the roads are safe, your speed limits, your social services, so your Medicaid, those healthcare related things. So if you got a unstable person up at the top that is delivering money down and an unstable person there, now you have two levels that's about to impact you. Now, where I believe the most important level is selecting your mayor and your council folks.
Amen.
When you wake up in the morning, let somebody not pick up the trash on trash day. Let them miss that for 3 weeks. You now have a potential for disease. You now have other ailments that are directly impacting your everyday life. Let your water not come on one day. Let your water have lead in it. The people that are responsible for making sure these things are on the up and up are your local officials. They're your council folks. And depending on the type of government you have, the mayor. This is the person that you have direct access, direct and immediate accountability to. These are the individuals that you can go down to the meeting through public comment and voice your concern and is heard. This is where the rubber meets the road. And so if you think that none of that matters, allow it not to exist. And you'll be asking for a government. You'll be asking for it. You know, and like I said, I lived in a place to where we literally couldn't go for walks. I mean, my wife and I had our 2-year-old there. We couldn't go to walks because the sidewalks were so dangerous in the area that we lived in. I mean, can you imagine that? We talk about having bumps in the sidewalks. Imagine falling in a 30-foot hole. local governments take care of sidewalks. That's the one that you can touch and say, hey, can we get these sidewalks straight? You know, that's the impact that local government has. And that's the reason why we all need to be engaged in that process.
Yeah. And for me, even more than those helps, for me, the biggest thing with local government is your economic development plan. Much of what's happening today in all of our cities was written out some 20, maybe 30 years ago in an economic development plan. People, you know, fight and yell about gentrification. Again, I like to use the metaphor, a truck or a train rolling. At this point, you rolled over. You can either roll with it or get rolled over. In some instances, and I emphasize, underline, and all put in all caps, in some instances, it's your city council that influences those economic development plans. It is your mayor that has the vision, or should have the vision, as well as the city manager, for the direction the city goes in. I tell you, I tip my hat off to those who came up, and I know the names, but I'm not gonna mention it, those who came up with the concept of RVA, because Richmond, Virginia has come such a long way, and it still has its issues, so I'm aware of that. But someone in the mid-90s had the wherewithal, when there was so much crime near VCU, there was a gang called the Dog Pound that ruled that area. And they came up with a plan to change that, the way that neighborhood looked. And they revamped lofts and buildings and complexes and housing market. And that city has grown in many ways. I know it's got its issues, especially politically, but those people on the front lines in your city government are the ones who make that kind of change happen. And being someone who has lived in Petersburg the majority of his life, I'm well aware that when we have people in place that have vision, it can cast forward vision. And I want to be clear, I'm not knocking anyone that's currently in office, but I'm just saying when you have leadership that has vision, it can change the direction and trajectory of a city. One of the things that grieves me about candidates often when they challenge current administration, all they talk about is what's wrong with the current administration. But if you don't have vision and connections and resources to take us to that next place, you'll be just as bad or worse. So like you, I am a huge advocate for city government. Again, our city council needs to be representative of people of influence, resources, and connections. And if you don't know anybody, you don't need to be in that seat. If you can't make some phone calls, then you don't need to be in that seat. Because I do believe the wealthiest and possibly most powerful people in a locality, whether it's a county or a city, will have nothing to do with government. But whoever's in the city council, they need to be able to make those phone calls. They need to be connected to those real estate developers. They need to be connected with those entities like Greater Metropolitan that help attract companies to the Richmond, Virginia area and so many others. Our city government is so important. It is when you have potholes in your street and they've been there for 3 weeks, they are the ones you call. When the grass is so high and you don't know why no one's cutting it, they are the ones to call. When your water bill is ridiculous, they are the ones you call. Yet people focus so much on the national elections, they ignore all of that. So for anyone listening, please, please get to know your local government and all that's going on. It has such an impact on your life, on your children's lives, your school system, again, your sheriff's department. Whether or not you have a regional jail or you continue with the traditional system, and that's a whole nother conversation. But there are so many factors in local government. But I can't stress this enough. Local government matters.
Yep. It all very salient points. To bolt it down from an economic development perspective. City councils have to vote to develop the land. So at the end of the day, it comes down to a land transfer to a developer or the selling of property to a developer so that they could develop it. And the citizenry and their involvement with their local officials have a unique opportunity to shape the environment that they want to see. And so, when we get into these conversations of gentrification, when we get into the conversations of community benefits to development deals, these are pure local government issues. Exactly what you're talking about, the rubber meets the road in that council meeting when they are voting to transfer the land so the development can take place, or they're voting to sell a particular property so that the development can take place. It all comes down to that local entity being responsible for developing the community that it wants to develop. Your point about elected officials with vision, that is a Pandora's box in many respects. So some localities have went to having a full-time council because cities need someone with full-time attention and full-time vision.
Right.
Many localities have part-time councils that aren't financially viable for them to just do that. And so you get folks that may not have the attention, may not have the capacity, may not have the skill to even be able to fathom what that vision looks like. And so I'm trying to be artful and not just being crass. Mm-hmm. But and if you look at some of the bigger localities with more progressive localities, they have a full-time dedicated legislative body.
Right.
Many of our places, particularly our cities that are downtrodden for a variety of reasons, we do not have that. And so what it's really going to take is for individuals to actually want to do that because that's what they want to do.
Right.
As opposed to it being
financially lucrative.
So I'll leave that there so that I'm I don't go a little deeper than that.
Yeah, but see, you'd be amazed at the amount of people that don't know that city council gets paid and how much they do or do not get paid. And you're right. The larger locales, and there are a few cities in Virginia that are large enough to be full-time, but the majority are part-time. Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, there are things coming down the pike constantly, but they're working a 9-to-5, or in many cases, they're entrepreneurs,
mm-hmm.
But they still have a family, they have other responsibilities. And so those cities that can afford to invest in those visionaries, it's great. The problem is, as you were alluding to, when the city can afford to do it, they often get people that are looking at dollar signs rather than democracy. So it's a challenge. It's a pull.
Let's stay here for a minute. So, like, historically, let's stay here in black politics.
Okay.
Right? in Black politics, particularly in our urban cities.
The urban cities are often the ones that can afford to pay full time.
Right. We have politicians have usually settled into three molds. You were a lawyer, a preacher, or a doctor. Those three industries provide you an ability to where your political actions won't impact your check. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm a lawyer, I can defend people, right? Right. And I'm kind of prepared to quickly go through the legislation that's necessary. If I'm a preacher, I got the people, right? And so I'm providing them that chicken soup for the soul. I have a sense on where the community is at all time and a microphone to say it from. Or I'm a doctor because I'm the babies that are coming in. I'm meeting the community the same way and people get sick. We have not left that mold in politics, Black politics, really yet. And when we do, those individuals have far more challenges in making sure that their political role doesn't impact their ability to feed their family.
Right.
You know, so the larger conversation as we talk about this is that we need to figure out a way, I believe we need to figure out a way to support those with that diverse level of experiences. Like, for example, the daggone principal. Can the principal be a politician without him losing his school based on a vote? It's happened before. I mean, that's how the political muscle is leveraged. Mm-hmm. What can I do to force your decision? Right? And so we have to, as a community, begin to think of ways in which, yeah, this person will be great for this office. I mean, and I've a couple of people with the current mayor's office, you're like, man, that guy would be a great candidate. Yeah, but he got two kids going to college right now.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that time frame of productiveness is short. And so if you look at the last couple of mayors that we've had in Richmond, we had Wilder, who was on the back end with the Jukes. You then had Mayor Jones, a preacher. And now you have LeVar Stoney that was on the come up. First start on the come up. Where's the experienced, energetic hand? They got kids in college. They got young families to raise. And so as a community of Black political power, we have to find a way to groom and support, you know, those individuals where when they're doing the right thing, the repercussions for doing the right thing aren't drastic to their families.
Yeah. And I could be wrong. I've thought about that as well. And typically, I would argue 75% of the time, it's the lawyer that goes, because yep. people feel like they have more of a grasp on the laws than any of the other entities. The Dwight Jones don't happen as often. That right. might have happened more in the 60s.
Right.
When we were in Reconstruction, that happened a lot.
A lot. I mean, that was the primary during that time. I think you're right.
Yeah, but now it's primarily the lawyer. But I think the guard is going to change because there are a lot more college educated young people that are aspiring to be in politics and they go straight to it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The challenge is they spend so much time. I'm just going to say they spend so much time getting coffee and donuts that they're always competing with these people who've been popular for 20 years. So mm-hmm. by the time it's their time and they're in the prime and they have the awareness and the wherewithal to lead a locality.
They don't have a skill.
Yeah.
So I mentioned it earlier about how full circle this has been, right? For me.
Yeah.
Nine members, I report to a nine-member body, Four of those members are what I call my veterans. You know, they grew up in Richmond. They didn't see it all from their perspective. There is no way I could convince them of anything if I didn't have everything that I did in the middle to prepare me for it. Mm-hmm. That required me to go leave and go out in the world. If I would have stayed here from when I walked in the door, I wouldn't definitely not be in this office. Right. Because I would have been getting too many damn donuts that you were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, so that grooming that you're talking about, it's almost like we have to send our folks away and then welcome them when they come back. Mm. It's particularly when we're talking about the local level. You know, because what makes me dangerous here is I mean, we speak with bravado at times. It's like, you know, I went and swam with the sharks. And what's a goon to a goblin? Nothing. I'm time enough here because I survived there. Yeah. You know, and you carry that with you. But if I stayed here, I couldn't say that. And we have to be willing to say, our folks with potential, we're going to support you to go out there, but you got to come back. And we're sending you out there so that you can bring what you've learned to help build this community that birthed you.
Yeah.
You know, we can't bring them back and then say, nah, we want you to continue getting these donuts. And so when we talk about the guard changing, I think that's the friction between the two. I know it's the friction that I deal with when I come in here. Mm-hmm. You know, who are you? And I'm like, I'm me, and I remember you, and I went on and did some other things, and this is what we have right now. Can you explain to me why we should be doing this the same way we did it in 2003?
Hold on one second. I didn't hear what
I'm talking about.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
No problem. You good. We almost through.
Yeah, man, but you know, we have to be willing to support our young talent, and you know, be aware that, you know, I mean, I tell people all the time, it's like dealing with my dad, man. And I think our dads are of similar age and of similar time. You're like, come on, man, you know, you're like, it don't have to be like that,
yeah.
You know, but it's coming along because you know, as they age and, you know, you have your own family and, you know, you do your own thing, it gets a little bit easier for them. And it's like that trust of it's in good hands, you know? So, you know, and this is happening in the political environment too, particularly in Black politics.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I have enjoyed this dialogue immensely. I'm going to just ask 2 to 3 more questions. I know anyone that's listening, they're curious about certain practices when it comes to voting. So I want to get your thoughts on early voting. Should people do it? Mail-in voting? I personally am skeptical about the mail-in voting process, but what are your thoughts on early voting? Do you recommend people doing it?
If you have the option to early vote, do it. Do it. In Virginia, they've made it about as easy as they can in Virginia.
Yeah.
You know? So take advantage of that. The registrars, when they get your ballot, you know it's counted, you know it's in there. If vote.
Yeah.
So if you have to send it in the mail, send it in the mail. Send it early. Send it early. And if you have to get to the polls, put on your mask, do your social distancing, press the button. But early voting, I mean, people fought very hard to get that. And it was a fight because they didn't want you to do it. And why do you think they didn't want you to do it? Because they want to limit, and the people who typically take advantage of early voting are the people that have a difficult time voting on Tuesday. And those individuals are typically those that they don't want to have a voice. And they, meaning the power elite, they don't want to have a voice in our democracy.
Right.
Talk about that room that was designed early on of those influential people. You know, they don't want the body to have the same abilities that we all have. So take every opportunity to vote.
Amen. And I encourage people in Virginia to pay close attention to amendments that are being proposed this year. There are two that are very significant. One is for veterans. The question has been raised, should veterans have to pay property tax?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sway one way or the other, but I do believe we should take special care of our veterans. I'll just put it like that. The second one, which is really big on my radar, is historically, when there's been a redistricting of electoral regions, I forget the proper term for it, but districts, electoral districts, the governor and general assembly has decided, hey, we're just going to change this district and we're going to put this neighborhood over there and we're going to put this neighborhood over there. But now, rather than it being up to the governor and general assembly, they are proposing that 8 people that represent the local community will be somewhat of an advisory board to this. Here's why I feel like this is important. Electoral districts are often the greatest display of segregation. it is very strategic so that certain people can win. If you want your voice to be heard, at least be at the table, or at least have someone like you at the table to represent, to say, no, this is not right. This is unfair, and we see what you're doing. So in Virginia, in the Commonwealth of Virginia, if you're listening, please pay attention to those amendments and bylaws. They are important. They affect us for many years to come. Brother Anderson, thank you for being on the Mac Attack Show. You have been a joy. You've given some great insight. I'm going to ask you 2 last questions that everybody wants to know. First question is, and you can fill in the blank. First question is, if Trump wins, blank. The second question is, if Biden wins, blank.
If Trump wins, hold on, because the time ahead is going to be an over expression of what we've experienced for the last 4 years. It will be validation that our democracy is in significant decline, and it will be license for an already unhinged first term to go off the rails. And if he wins, we as a community are going to have to hold on to each other and to protect ourselves, because it's going to get real. If Biden wins, I believe we need to keep the last 4 years front of mind. We will have proven as a society that, as a collective society, that we view something different for the place that we live. And we're going to have to get to work to rebuild those institutions so that an aberration like the last 4 years doesn't happen again. I don't think Biden is a panacea for all things good. I think you can take the break that you dodged one, or we dodged one, but we need to double down our efforts on rebuilding what I believe, well, the country, 3 million more people voted for the other way, believe we are. You know, I do believe that we as a collective community have the strength to overcome either result. But, you know, Lord knows, I would rather be playing offense for a little while than defense.
Amen. Amen. I'll be transparent. one of the concerns I've had for the last 2 years, going back to the conversation about grooming, was I didn't see anyone being groomed to defeat 45. I just didn't see that process happening. And so I have tremendous concern. I'm praying. I'm a man of faith, and I'm praying that that God places whom we need in office. But I feel like if we want something done, or if we want change, we need to be a little bit more offensive and proactive.
Yep.
That's nationally and locally.
And locally. Yep.
So, all right. Well, thank you. I appreciate you, man. It's been a joy.
And hey, likewise. It's been a pleasure. Family be blessed. Man. You as well, man. I definitely always enjoy any opportunity to, you know, talk in a free-flowing and candid way, especially with a brother like yourself that I trust and respect. So, you know.
Likewise, my friend. Been a friend for 19 years now.
19 years, man. Yeah.
All right, my brother.
Yep.
God bless.
God bless you, man.